And welcome to another episode of that 401k podcast. Ari Rosemount here with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
I'm well, sir. Had a restful Thanksgiving holiday, which was good. Looks like winter's officially here. We're getting that wintry mix here in the Northeast.
Yeah,
at least in the lower part of the Northeast. I know up in more New England, they got smacked with a lot of snow.
Yeah, I think even parts of northern New Jersey are going to get hit, and Rockland County always gets hit, and I think we're going to be spared. Right now, we got I got a hail or whatever. Thanksgiving is always kind of fun. It's one of my favorite holidays, mainly because it's the all-American holiday. No religion and no fireworks and, nobody dying or, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. One day, and like I said, you do have a penchant for that turkey.
And thanks to you, I found out that there is a Thanksgiving sandwich at a Cheesecake Factory. And I was going on and on and on about it after I had it when I saw you on Wednesday.
Really? Wow. Cool.
I'm going to have to get it again on Wednesday, probably.
There you go.
I mean, it was that good.
It's the holiday season. It's about, laying back and enjoying the harvest, so to speak,
I don't know about enjoy the harvest. I'm not harvesting anything of late, and I didn't kill my turkey. I just went to Costco.
You know what I mean? A harvest in terms of the successfulness, hopefully, of the previous year.
Yeah, I guess so.
To me, it's
all about the all American holiday, family, and
football.
I mean, your Ohio State did pretty well against Michigan.
Yeah, I'm a little upset we didn't drop the 60 burger that I had predicted, but
well, 50 I'll, was it 56 or whatever?
I'll take 56.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta remember that when I grew up, when my fandom, call it Jesus, I don't know, 27 year love affair with the Ohio State football team, there was a whole lot of pain following the third Saturday in November, right? I signed up right in the middle of a John Cooper nightmare where Michigan won every year. We'd be ranked second or first or whatever.
Yeah, Lloyd Carr had some good teams too when he was the coach.
Yeah. Well, it all changed on that fateful. I want to say it was a December day when Senator Jim Tressel walked into the basketball arena and told the faithful that the nation will be proud of their student athletes in, 340 days or whatever. And that speech really changed the momentum in the past 20 years or so. It's not even been a rivalry. It's very enjoyable from my perspective. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, they, Michigan has not had a good run since they pushed out Lloyd Carr. They kind of pushed him out. The Rich Rodriguez debacle. They have never recovered from that.
Yeah, it's a total tangential story, but it popped into my head. Lloyd Carr had I think he's since passed on. He had a very sick grandson. Did a TV spot on a couple of years ago. I'm content. I'm happy. I'm hoping we stay number one. I don't want a piece of Clemson unless the money's on the table, so to speak. Clemson is a good team, right?
Well, LSU is a pretty good team, too. So, who the heck knows in a playoff?
With the Ohio State transfer, Joe Burrow. Did you see that nonsense? He came out with the EAU on his jersey and they made him take it off?
Yeah.
Silliness.
Yeah, well, that's NCAA for you.
That's right. So what are we talking about today?
Well, we'll talk about our topic, but let's, of course, shill out for our events that are upcoming. And one thing that, you know, we're looking at is obviously Arlington, Texas, in about a week from the time this episode breaks and is dropped. We'll be at AT&T Stadium, Dallas, Arlington, Texas, December 13th. Then we, of course, have that 401k National Conference, Walt Disney World, March 10th to 11th, 2020. Then we will be in Houston, Texas, April 17th. May the 8th, I believe, is going to be St. Louis, and June the 5th, or is it May the 5th? And I don't know. Somewhere I could do the math. May the 8th will be St. Louis, and June the 5th will be Minneapolis. Go to that foreignksite.com for further information. Of course, our buddy, my buddy, Everson Walls, will be our guest in Arlington, Texas. Heck of a defensive back for the Cowboys and the New York Giants. Of course, he won a Super Bowl with the Giants. So, again, you know, these are great events. $100 gets you admission, lunch, stadium tour, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we're looking forward to, obviously, the event in Arlington, Texas, and then the events in 2020.
Yeah, and you know, for all you Cowboy fans, you know, getting a chance to get out on the field in Jerry World and you know, get a picture at the star should be pretty.
We might actually have to go for that stadium tour.
Yeah, yeah, that's a valid point. We should make sure that we coordinate that with Larry. But come out, man! That is a truly rare experience, and one I'd hazard if you can actually put it all together and coordinate it. It's probably going to cost you a hell of a lot more than $100 or whatever Ari's charging to come out. So, you know, this is a good one. This is a great opportunity to do something that very, very few folks will be able to do. You know, don't miss out, guys.
Yeah, so pretty soon, I think by the time this drops, we'll have St. Louis and Houston up for purchase for their tickets. So it's going to be a lot of fun. In terms of our topic for today, our topic is going to be about, you know, foul-ups and bleeps and blunders, in a sense. A retirement plan, foul-ups, bleeps and blunders. That's a joke. I don't remember, you know, time frame. If you remember, Dick Clark and Ed McMahon had a TV show called TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes.
Yeah.
Yes. And the best part of it was, you know, anytime in Hollywood, when you have something successful, of course, you're going to have something replicating that. So I think it was Don Rickles and Steve Lawrence had a show called Foul-Ups, Bleeps, and Blunders. So on ABC, which of course lasted a year. Not one of Don's greatest works. But anyway, in terms of, you know, plan problems, you know, I have a tax LLM degree. And I took a course, I jokingly say it was a qualified plan course taught by a very well-known ERISA attorney's partner, well, now partner. And we can blame him for, I guess, me getting into ERISA. But anyway, the beauty of taking a course for a tax LLM degree about qualified plans is that, you know, the coursework, it's all about how plans ought to be. These are the rules. But the problem is that the rule book and the case book and the materials that we had didn't take into account that things don't go well. Things get screwed up either by the plan sponsor or by the plan providers. And, you know, there are obviously glaring problems that we're probably just going to just dismiss off the hand. But we'll talk about other situations, other problems. I mean, plain documents, yeah. You know, there'll be people who forget the restatements and, you know, don't have a GUST or ECTRA or PPA restatement done on a timely fashion. And they got to go through the IRS VCP program. We know about these people. You know, that was always back in the day when I first started out. That was the big error for VCP programs. And quite honestly, thanks to computers and spreadsheets and people really being on top of things, I don't get that kind of work anymore. I get other types of errors. And obviously the number one error these days is dealing with late deferral deposits. Dan's had some clients in that realm where, you know, they have late deferrals. And I have other clients as well, not putting in deferrals in a timely basis. And, you know, that's a problem.
Yeah. We've talked about it a lot on the podcast, right? I mean, that's one of those things, though, that I do this for a living, right? We're 316s. We take on a lot of liability for this sort of stuff. And inevitably, no matter how controlled of an environment it is, something always just goes a little askew. Not always in the sense that it's constant or even frequent, but it happens, right? And you know, I sort of shudder to think about what happens in plans that don't have the benefit of the controls that we have in place. Just how screwy, how frequent the untimely contributions are. I this is from experience. There's sort of an unchecked area, right, between what the record keeper deems as untimely, which is the letter of the law, 15 days after the month following, and what an auditor might deem as late. And I'm not talking about a regulator, I'm talking about an auditor. Regulators will come in if you're in a DOL audit, really anything over 5-6 days, and they're going to consider it late. But there's still, I guess, where I'm meandering towards is the fact that there's still some ambiguity in terms of what is late, what's not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem aspect of it was, we had this regulation on the books. It said, you know, it's timely if you have basically a fail-safe. If you get it in the 15th day of the following month, that's your time frame. And then the Department of Labor said, no, forget what it's on the books. Our interpretation is as soon as possible. And the problem is with laws and regulations and whatnot, there's always a gray area. What does as soon as possible mean? And like with anything, in ERISA, a lot of the times in the qualified plan area on the code as well, it's all facts and circumstances. And, the joke obviously is that when we deal with facts and circumstances, that gives ERISA attorneys the reason to bill by the hour and come up with these interpretations and arguments and all that kind of stuff, which is probably why I charge on a flat fee basis. But yeah, I mean, the problem with deferrals is, it's like the first thing you got to do, put the money into the account. And the problem is we, as a business, we were trained. I mean, I had, one of the most miserable, the most miserable person I ever worked with in the retirement plan business, a guy by the name of Manny. He was the COO of a TPA that I worked at, and I remember back. I remember back in the days that he would get a Schwab check on his desk. It wasn't on, he didn't want clients to send money through ACH. He had them with FedEx envelopes with FedEx envelopes with checks, and with that things get mishandled, things get lost, and what happens then? So it's a big problem, but more so these days because we're expected, thanks to ACH, there's no reason why you can't get that money out in 2-3 days.
Agreed.
It's a huge problem. And the problem with deferrals, as we saw, just doing a 5330 this past weekend, yes. It's not one and done. When somebody's late, they're late multiple times. And some clients, they're late 100 and some odd times over the years. And it's a big, big problem.
What was the number on that, Ari? 150, 160?
It was like 140 something, I thought. I don't even,
Going back to 2011.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the same thing with bills. When somebody's late with bills, they're not late once, they're late multiple times.
Yeah. No, understood. What was the biggest you've ever seen on a 5,500.
How many?
The largest amount.
I can't, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of, you know, earnings and whatnot. There's one client in particular that, you know, went on. For some reason, this past year was a lot of, you know, famous restaurant groups, multiple locations with multiple deferrals.
Yeah. Well, it's costly, and to your point, it's a problem. I mean, I've seen $500,000 on, you know, some 5,500s. So it's, I don't understand how you can be that late so often, but it happens.
Listen, you know, when it comes to paying bills, sometimes you're always late with, you know, a certain amount. And it's just, you know, so many things, you know, making things that can just really go wrong. And, you know, it's a really frequent problem. Other situations, like, as we'll discuss, they're not so frequent. But, you know, number one with the bullet in terms of mistakes, you know, salary deferrals, not, you know, depositing in a timely fashion. Another big error I've seen of late, because it's happened twice within the past couple months. You think this is a simple thing. RMDs, required minimum distributions. I mean, listen, fellas, ladies, you know, RMDs, you know, back in the day, required minimum distribution rules was something that constantly was changing over time between TEFRA, TRA86, and then TRA97, which is the gust, you know, kind of changes. The rules on required minimum distribution changed. You know, there was one point where nobody had to take out an RMD. Then it was only owners, and then it went to owners and employees. Now it's back to 5% owners only have to take out. Individuals, employees only have to take out when they actually retire. So I've had two situations where highly compensated employees were supposed to take out an RMD and just didn't, because the plan sponsor forgot to give them a distribution.
Yeah, what's the correction on that, bud?
Well, the problem here is that your excise tax is 50% of the minimum. So that's a huge hit that you're going to get the participant for. So the best way to do that is to go through a voluntary compliance program. Hopefully it's only one or two people that you've done this to, and try to get a you know, a forgiveness of the excise tax for a plan participant, because there's nothing worse than, you know, when a plan participant gets a $50,000 penalty.
That's a big number.
You know, years ago I worked for a TPA who bought another TPA, and I remember the old TPA screwed up on the RMD for the owners of the company, and they ended up with a $100,000 tax bill on the excise tax. And I was able to convince the IRS, the advocate or whatever, to fix that. And the excise tax was forgiven. Of course, the best part of the story was my boss, the TPA who bought the old TPA, wanted to charge them to fix it. And of course, the client was swift enough to say, wait a second, you bought this company, they screwed up. Why are you charging me for fixing now your error? So, you know, the best part of the story was, so they actually, you know, because I couldn't charge him, they actually sent me a tip. They gave me a couple bucks in the mail, which is kind of cool.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And quite unusual.
Yeah, the only time that ever happened. But of course, now that you work on your own, you don't get any tips. But Joe always begs a question about tips and which businesses you should tip and which you shouldn't. Reminds me of something out of Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, I think we could get a whole book published, especially in today's world, with the DoorDashers and the Uber guys and, you know, the gig economy.
Well, I mean, you know, those guys I can see tipping, you know, the paper person and, you know, obviously the waiter and waitress. I mean, I draw the line when it's when you're going to a deli or you're going to Dunkin' Donuts and they have the little tip jar by the register.
Yes, sir.
The kind of subtle, you know, I need, you know, I mean, when you go to Manhattan, you park your car in a garage. The guys don't have a tip jar. It's a given that if somebody gives you your car back in good shape and good condition, you should tip them. But I mean, I draw the line when I see a tip jar. I'm not giving anybody any money.
I saw one over the weekend where they said tips in cash are preferred, so they don't even want you to put down the credit card slip.
Well, that reminds me. My mother was a teacher many years ago in Brooklyn. I forget it was a student or it might have been an older student. You know, somebody who graduated years later and got married. And they sent out the wedding invitation, and it was like, cash gifts are preferred. It was something like that. Like, really? You put that in there, you know?
Cash gifts are preferred. That's awesome. Well, it takes some courage, man.
Listen, you know, I jokingly say, you know, if you want to lose some people in your life, you should throw a wedding, a bar mitzvah, confirmation, all that kind of stuff. Because people really wig out with that kind of stuff. And my favorite is when I got engaged and got married, or even when I had kids, annoys me the most is the gift registry.
Yeah.
So you say, this is what I want. And then I love the people who say, no, I want you to have this. And I'll never forget, it was for the wedding or the engagement registry, whatever. And my wife drinks coffee and I don't. And this is before K-cup machines got into vogue in the houses. You know, K-cup machines, they were just workplace machines. And I think my wife put down like a KitchenAid, you know, coffee maker. And, you know, she wasn't a big coffee person in the sense that, you know, because I don't drink it. And so the best part of it was her sister says, oh, no, you want this one, this Krups machine. And it's like... I just love the whole gift giving thing, and because one of my favorite sayings is, "Whoever said that it's a thought that counts never got a crappy gift."
There you go.
So,
what's next?
So, what's next on our list? You know, obviously, operating the plan not according to its terms. That's a big problem, and it could really be something innocuous. Eligibility, obviously, to me, is a big deal. You know, if you're not doing the correct eligibility according to what your plan document says, it's huge. But then there are other differences that, you know, are very, benign, because I think not following the plan document is never benign. But, you know, something like forfeitures, not dealing with forfeitures in a timely fashion. You know, we have a lot of clients out there who think that somehow forfeitures are a war chest that they can amass and grow because they're going to, I don't know, field an army or something. I don't know. But I've seen that. And that's kind of innocuous, but that does happen. If they violated the loan policy by taking out multiple loans when it's a one loan outstanding, that could be a huge thing. And then next on the list, which was very, very popular for a time and it kind of died down, but I still think it's big, is compensation. Not using the correct compensation in the plan document versus practice. You know, impermissibly excluding or including a part of compensation. So, you know, for example, not letting participants to defer or get a match contribution on overtime. That's a big one. Or, you know, some reimbursement where it was supposed to be excluded, but it wasn't. So that was a huge error that, you know, I had multiple clients deal with. Now, for some reason, RMDs are the big deal. But that's a huge, huge problem because you may require to have corrective contributions, and of course, when you don't allow people the opportunity to defer, that goes to, you know, something that, you know, we all know about, which is not giving participants the opportunity to defer. Usually happens when somebody's eligible and you forget about them, and then all of a sudden, you know, you remember and. If you don't correct it with a specific period of time, you have to make a QNIC to the plan participant, which for a plan sponsor hurts because you're giving them a fully vested contribution that they, you know, really shouldn't have been entitled to had you not screwed up.
Yeah.
I had a family member go through that situation. They were supposed to enter the plan on a January 1, and before HR, whatever, could, you know, think about it, it was a few months, you know, that transpired, and a corrective contribution had to be made.
What, and I've got something to say on this topic as well, because the regs have recently changed. I don't know how far back that change has been, but there was a change there. But on forfeitures, what's the rule of thumb there, right? We have to use those forfeitures in the plan year for current plan year expenses. What's the...
Well, look to what your plan document says. Most documents these days do allow you to pay for administrative expenses, or, you know, back in the old days, we didn't have that language. We used to reduce, add it, and reallocate. You know, those were really the choices. So look to the plan document as to what to do, but you got to do it annually. Because the problem is that if you have something like reducing employer contribution or especially reallocating it, say you had a participant and was entitled to a reallocation 1 year and then left the employer, and then 5 years later the plan sponsor says, oh, we got all these forfeitures. Those participants who left your employee, by my definition, should have been entitled to a contribution. And to me, it's a compliance headache. So that's why forfeitures should be dealt with on an annual basis.
Okay. That's what we tell our plan sponsors.
Of course. And in terms of the eligibility to defer, not giving them that opportunity to defer, you know, check the regs. If the mistakes are fixed within a couple months, you don't have to make the QNEC anymore. It's a huge error, but it does happen from time to time. And of course,
and what's the time frame there, bud?
Well, you gotta fix it within 90 days to avoid a QNEC.
To avoid any kind of QNEC.
Correct.
And then is there a period of time where you get the reduced 25%?
Yeah, a couple of years. 25%. Yeah. It went down from 50% to 25%.
Yeah, I want to say it was 21 months. I could be wrong, but I think that was the – it gave you the year and then basically up to the filing deadline.
Correct.
Of the following year.
Yeah, and the same can be said about failed ADP and ACP tests. You know, too often the tests are done incorrectly. Plan sponsor is told, oh, look, we made a mistake a couple years ago. And the problem with failure of an ADP and ACP test years later is you don't have the opportunity to do refunds, especially in the point of an ADP test. You can't do refunds at all. You're going to have to make a QNEC. So it may be costly to fix it. And like I said, that's the biggest problem is, you know, when you wait to find out that something failed, you lose the opportunity to fix something on your time and, you know, in a cost-effective manner. And of course, you know, another big error, obviously, is dealing with plan loans. You know, not according to the terms of the loan policy in the plan, or not according to the rules concerning permit transactions. Because what people don't realize is that loans are an exception to the permit transaction rules. But in order to be an exception, they gotta abide by certain terms. You know, that means 5-year repayment, except obviously if it's a residential house, quarterly repayments, you know, that sort of stuff. And, you know, back in the day, I will never forget, still to this day, it's shocking, when I had a plan sponsor being audited. And prior to 2002, for many of those who were not in the business at the time, we had a quirky rule concerning plan loans. You couldn't take out a loan if you're an S-corporation shareholder. That rule changed with EGTRA in 2001, which was effective in 2002. We eliminated that rule. So I had a plan sponsor, S-corporation. The owners of the company took out loans in excess of the $50,000 limit, which, of course, again, that's another exception to the prohibited transaction rules. And surprisingly, the IRS auditor didn't disqualify the plan. But here, that was a prohibited transaction, and you know, they had a file of 5330 and all that kind of stuff. But it's one of those quirky things and one of the reasons why, you know, while I do love loans, I hate them at the same time.
Yeah, the one thing, and this probably isn't, you know, a real issue other than a, you know, personal pet peeve of mine. When, you know, you've got the two loan thing and you've got folks paying off a loan to take out another loan, there's this subsection of plan participants that just get on these hamster wheels with these loans. And, you know, we've got some participants that have had 25 loans over like a 5-6 year employment history. It's nuts.
No, it's absolutely nuts. In my experience, you know, plan loans, I mean, it's like usually a year or two where they forget to get a repayment, or, you know, something happens where there are multiple loans and they forget to pay off one loan. And I mean, to me, that's one of the worst things, because you're making a mistake and it's costing the participant. I mean, the participant did pay off the loan, so they kind of made out. But the worst thing to do is to get a 1099 for a deemed distribution. I mean, that hurts. That really, really hurts. And if you don't fix it, you know.
I can personally tell you that. We got handed one of those on a loan that was, let's just call it, in an unfortunate situation, was deemed. And we got hit with a very substantial 1099. And it did hurt, to your point.
Exactly. And last but not least, in terms of foul-ups, bleeps, and blunders that probably want to talk about, obviously 5,500, you know, that's, to me, that's a whole nother story, which is just a common mistake, and it's a no-brainer. But one thing that I think that people need to realize now is dealing with hardship distributions. And I really believe that the IRS, when coming to audits, if you have a hardship provision and there are people with multiple hardship requests, they will ask for backup. And, you know, I'm a hard ass when it comes to hardship distribution rules. I got a vet, you know, I've told from time to time, blessing off on hardship distributions when, you know, information wasn't there. I remember way back when, a couple years back, a record keeper said, oh, you know, we'll take care of your hardship requests. And I thought that was the most nonsensical thing, because they didn't ask for backup. And yeah. I think that, you know, if a plan sponsor is not asking for backup, just taking people's word at it, boy, that's a dumb idea. I mean, I've had some weird hardship requests over the years. My favorite was the guy who went to prison and wanted to get a hardship to pay off something for his, you know, which didn't fall within the hardship rules.
What? Prison time? There isn't an exception for prison?
No.
The prison commissary spend?
No, there really isn't. So, you know. Legal expenses and all that kind of stuff. That legal expenses dealing with incarceration, that, you know, that's not an exception to the hardship rules.
Yeah. You know, we've had some that were really tough. I've had to turn down some folks that were in really bad situations. But, you know, unfortunately, that area is one of the few areas that we actually have concrete guidance, right? We have concrete, you know, we have a clear understanding of what is and is not acceptable, right? There isn't a whole lot of gray as it relates to hardships.
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of gray, and you really have to be like a police person. You know, I've been in a situation, you know, again, you know, 21 years of ERISA attorney, you've seen so much stuff. I mean, I've had, you know, participants pretend to claim they didn't get a check, that their check got stolen, and they, you know, my favorite was the guy who said, oh, my check got stolen. And then, of course, we got video from the check cashing place, and it's, unless he had an evil twin, that was him, you know? So it's just like, you can't take people's word for it. I mean, it's a sad thing, but that's the facts.
Yeah, well, yeah. Today's world, especially, I think.
So, yeah, that's going to be it for this week. I don't know. For some reason, I got Alexa. Alexa's, like, off track today. I don't know. I got to reboot my... because all of a sudden, she's just, like, spouting off that she's not connected. I don't know.
Is she unhappy about stuff?
I have no idea. Because it's not only her, it's the one upstairs, too. I don't know what's going on.
The inner workings of Alexa?
Yeah, I don't know what she's what her problem is today.
All right, bud.
I'll have to work that out.
Go okay. Have a talk with her.
Exactly. So until next week, so long, and we'll hear, hopefully you'll hear from us from our next 401k podcast. Maybe we'll have something from Arlington, Texas. We'll see.
Sounds good. Have a good week, guys.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.